It's Saturday night. That means it's time for the Don Tony Show.
The wait all week long is finally over. Get Don Tony's perspective on current affairs in the world of pro wrestling and much more. The Don Tony Show.
And now your host, the man, the legend, Don Tony.
All right, I know the intro says it's Saturday night. Technically, it's Saturday morning over here, 11:05 a.m., but I know somewhere in blah, 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 Stan, it's evening, so somewhere in the world it is. So good evening, good morning, good afternoon, everybody. The Don Tony Show is live. It is Saturday, the 22nd of April, yes, 4:22, and I hope everybody is going to have a wonderful weekend. We are here to talk a little bit of WWE backlash. Some matches were announced yesterday. Interesting reaction. I will give you my thoughts in a few minutes. We will talk a little bit of AEW, Mercedes Moné. Unfortunately for someone, yeah, we had to recycle it. No Stardom money for you. Sorry, Trinity. No Stardom money for you. We will talk about that a little bit later. But, we got to talk about the CM Punk stuff. You know what's interesting? You might remember this phrase last year because I used the phrase twice last year. And the first time I used it had to do with MJF. And the second time I used it had to do with CM Punk. You remember this last year, journalistic kayfabe? Why report the actual story when you could be part of the story? You know, when I went back to last year to just refresh myself, what exactly was going down at that time and what exactly happened, do you know that when we were talking about this last year with CM Punk, that was before the media scrum at All Out. That was before the fight with the Elite in the locker room. Would you believe it? I mean, just to give you an idea that, you know, when we were talking about the Colt Cabana situation especially, this was building. This was snowballing into something massive. But I had to bring it back. And I had to bring it back because of reasons that might be a little bit different from last year. But, you know, when we get done with it, not only will you leave here hopefully with a better understanding of what is really going down right now with CM Punk and AEW, but what also is likely going down right now with a lot of those members of the Elite media. It's very, very important to take note of not only who is opening their mouth and who is yapping and yapping and yapping, it's the ones who are not. And it's not just Tony Khan in complete silence about this. It's not just AEW management in complete silence about this. It's not just every wrestler in complete silence about this. But there's a handful of journalists out there that have been very, very silent with this as well. Why? Because they are not looking to be part of a storyline. They are not looking to have their name attached to some of this in the world of wrestling when we look back at, you know, what goes down. So we'll break that down a little bit later. You know, would have been the opening story for tonight, but, you know, I think now we got to kind of talk about what's leading up to Backlash, the WWE draft. Yesterday, WWE put up this graphic for the draft, and, you know, as you will see, everybody is on there. I don't think Trish Stratus is on there because she's not a full-time wrestler, neither is Lita. But I thought it was kind of funny, the choice of photo that they used for Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch does not look thrilled. Drew McIntyre is there. Everybody is there. And anybody can be drafted. So, you know, the big thing that we have to think about is, will the women's champions be drafted to the respective brands? I'm telling you, don't keep that out of the question. Just a little preview. I'm probably jumping the gun a little bit, But, you know, I have a feeling that it's going to go down still. But I talked to Kevin Castle about doing a special episode Tuesday, a little draft preview predictions, who we believe should be drafted to Raw, SmackDown, who we think will be. And some, we're going to throw some far-fetched ideas out there. You know, I've made it known I want to see one or two people drafted to NXT, not just from NXT. And I think Corbin would be the perfect scenario there. We'll talk about the obvious picks for NXT wrestlers being promoted to the main roster. Also, I think there's going to be a little bit of, as Jim Cornette calls it, lazy booking, because I'm starting to think now Damage Control is going to split up without the need of a heel turn or a baby face turn, without the need of somebody, you know, just screwing the other person. I think the draft might be the way that they split up Damage Control. So here's the deal. Kev is working on Sunday, and he normally does have a lot of meetings on Tuesdays. He will let me know Sunday afternoon if he will be able to do it on Tuesday. Most likely, it will go down. And if it goes down, Kev and I will tape it live on Patreon Tuesday at 10. And then as soon as the show is over, it'll be up on for everyone out there. So everyone out there will be able to check it out. And, yeah, that's going to be a fun episode. I'm telling you, the draft, listen, you know, people were killing it and destroying it, you know, when the announcement was made. But, you know, the idea of, you know, my wild card is to have Ilya promoted to SmackDown. And I want Ilya to be part of Imperium. Nothing against Giovanni Vinci. But I think Ilya and Ludwig Kaiser would be an awesome tag team together. Also, you know, you look at the Street Profits. They may be forced to split. And you might start having flashbacks of when the Dudleys were split back in the day with the draft. You know, there's one thing we will be certain is that there's going to be some excitement coming out of the draft, but there's definitely going to be some decisions made that we are not going to like, that we are not going to agree with. So we'll see where that goes. Chris Cutra, thank you for the $19.99 super chat. I appreciate it. I will get into AEW in a few moments, and I'll share your comments. There's a little sneak preview on the screen for everybody right now. Yeah, we'll definitely get into what you said, and we'll talk a little bit more about Punk. So I will let everybody know on social media Sunday towards the evening. I'll let you know when I sit down. I'll post it on YouTube, and I'll mention it on Monday. So look out for that. That should be going down. So, all right, Backlash. Okay, Backlash is in 2 weeks. I mean, once we get through the draft, you literally just have 1 week away. So some matches were announced yesterday. And, you know, listen, there's no question, and we've talked about this. You already expected this yourself. There was going to be a heavy Latino footprint on Backlash. I'm a little surprised the LWO haven't been scheduled a match yet, but I believe that will go down. And speaking of, you know, since we're talking about Backlash, you know, Zelina Vega, part of the LWO, and after what we had go down yesterday on SmackDown, Santos Escobar eating another pin, I see that somebody sent in a $5 super chat about Santos Escobar, so I will definitely get into that in a moment. But she goes to Adam Pearce and says, you know, with everything that's been going down with the LWO and the Judgment Day, I want a match against Rhea Ripley at Backlash. I know people have been telling me all my life that I would never make it because I'm small and I'm tiny, but I want to show everyone that I can do it and this and that. And Adam Pearce is like, you know, well, let me talk to upper management and see what happens, this and that. And don't get me wrong, I'm happy for Zelina Vega to be getting this match at backlash, but yeah, this is going to be total squash. You will listen, Rhea Ripley will obviously sell a little bit, but you know, this is like the ultimate David versus Goliath. Unfortunately, not only does David not prevail, but it's going to be interesting to see if Rhea Ripley continues her assault post-match and if anybody goes out there to try to make the save. But look, Zelina Vega, Puerto Rican, and obviously backlash taking place in Puerto Rico. You knew there was going to be a heavy Latino influence on this card, and quite a few matches do reflect that. This is one of them. So this match will be going down at Backlash. Another match that will be going down at Backlash is this one. Austin Theory defending the United States Championship against Bronson Reed and Bobby Lashley in a three-way. Now, I see this a mile away. Some people out there think, oh, Bronson Reed, you know, he could steal the title. I'm a fan of Bronson Reed. I always sung the praise of him in NXT, but he has not clicked with fans as of yet. Him getting involved in a match on Raw, there was so many piped in boos, which we talked about. Remember? Yeah, remember that? Just forcing all these boos. I can't hear that today. The crowd is not connected to Bronson Reed yet. You know, and the thing is that WWE has a lot of big men. And I know Vince McMahon especially has, you know, a lifelong fascination with larger-than-life big men, agile big men that actually could wrestle even a little bit. That's why you see Omos getting pushed, and people got to start getting used to it, man. It's not just Vince McMahon loving Omos. It's also the roster that loves Omos. You know, I have put videos out there of him, you know, going back to his country, him behind the scenes, him mingling with fans. You know, the guy is genuinely one of the nicer people out there. And sure, we don't want to see him wrestle because he's a nice guy. You want to see him wrestle because he can work. But when you hear people like The Undertaker saying, man, I would mentor him. Like, if he could, I mean, obviously, even the character, you're not going to have Undertaker mentoring anybody unless it's probably something evil, you know, like Darkseid. That's high praise. When you hear other legends in pro wrestling, you know, giants singing the praise of Omos, and then hearing that this guy eats, sleeps, shits wrestling, that what this tells me is that these people see something in Omos that maybe a lot of people online do not see yet, and rightfully so. But you got to get used to that, because when we get into another match in a moment, you know, you'll see where I'm going with this. And I want to make it perfectly clear. Once again, like WrestleMania, the match I show you is not a match that I was looking forward to. Wasn't something I was expecting. But this match here, I could see it a mile away. I think what'll happen here with this three-way is that Bobby Lashley will just about be ready to pin Bronson Reed, or vice versa. And, you know, they're big men, so Austin Theory's going to have to really, you know, show his strength. Austin Theory is going to pick up this person, throw them out of the ring, and steal the pin. You'll probably have Bronson Reed do the splash off the top rope onto Bobby Lashley, and then right before we think Bronson Reed is going to win the championship, Austin Theory is going to throw his ass out of the ring, pin Bobby Lashley, go up the ramp, go like this, and match is over. How many times have we seen that? Yesterday on SmackDown, we saw the same finish again that we have been calling out on Triple H since last summer. You know, and you know what? I'm going to show a tweet that one of my fellow podcasters out there, somebody that I respect greatly, made a remark right before we went live. And it's something that not only have we talked about, but I agree with him 1,000%. But Austin Theory, you know, I do not see Bronson Reed holding this championship the majority of the WWE universe is not clicking with Bronson Reed. And I don't know what you do. I don't know what you do. When we talk about Karrion Kross, when we get into SmackDown, I'll give you a couple of quick thoughts about Karrion Kross. Look, Karrion Kross, friend of the family, obviously, and I root for that guy tremendously. Something I saw yesterday on SmackDown I really liked, but something that I honestly think, just an opinion, that I honestly think they need to change with Karrion Kross and quickly. And no, it's not to get rid of Scarlett. No, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. All right, this is another match that was announced for Backlash yesterday, and yeah, Seth Rollins taking on Omos. Interesting, no MVP behind Omos, but then again, you know, these graphics are a little bit smaller. Just like WrestleMania, this is not a match that I was looking forward to. And I definitely saw all the complaints last night online about it. Some people lost sleep over it. Some people have tweeted more about this than celebrities talking about losing their blue check marks. I mean, you know, it's a match. I agree. Seth Rollins, the way they've utilized him lately, has been less than desired. He beat Logan Paul at Mania, broke a losing streak, you know, which is great. But at the same time, though, we feel like, okay, what's next for Seth Rollins? Here's how I play devil's advocate with this match. My friends, okay, who would you have Seth Rollins face at Backlash instead? Please do not tell me Roman Reigns, because Roman Reigns is not dropping a championship anytime soon. Please do not tell me Gunther, because Gunther is not dropping the Intercontinental Championship anytime soon. Anybody you would have put up against Seth Rollins would have been random. Pretty much random. Could have put him against Ricochet. Could have put him against... But no matter who you choose, it's random. This match makes me think that Seth Rollins will win. And maybe that storyline that we think is going to happen with Omos turning babyface, I think that's going to happen. I think Omos ultimately is going to feud with Bronson Reed. I think Omos ultimately is going to feud with a few other individuals. I could see Omos fucking around with Baron Corbin if he doesn't get drafted to NXT. But, you know, any match you would have chosen for Seth Rollins would have been random. And, you know, that was the one thing that was missing yesterday on social media. And, you know, everybody that makes the noise was really complaining about this. But what's the alternative? What's the alternative? Rollins losing a championship opportunity once again? You know, it's like, I would rather... Listen, I want to make this clear. I don't want to see this match. And it's not a match that would have been on my radar. But neither was Brock Lesnar versus Omos at Mania. And Brock Lesnar versus Omos did exactly what it needed to do. It's an attraction. You know, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. And I'll probably enjoy this match too. And it's Backlash. You know what I mean? Like, it's Backlash. You know, after this is over, the draft will go down. I think Seth Rollins is going to SmackDown. I think Seth Rollins is absolutely going to SmackDown. With SmackDown being 2 hours instead of three, Seth Rollins will have more eyes on him within the 2 hours with ratings because people aren't exhausted for an hour three. And it makes some really new, fresh matches in order. So it's Backlash. You know, I don't want to see this match, but I'm going to, you know, I'm not going to lose sleep over it. I'm not going to tweet 10 times about it. I'm not going to write the ultimate, oh, this is fuck you, Vince, and all this stuff to get 900 likes and I feel like I'm special. You know, I'm just going to watch the match and move on. That's how I look at it. It's not something I was looking forward to. But hey, it is what it is. I'd rather see Rollins beat Omos than lose to Reigns or lose to Gunther or lose to Theory. They could have easily put Seth Rollins in that three-way match and made it a four-way. That probably would be my alternative. Bronson Reed versus Bobby Lashley versus Seth Rollins versus Austin Theory. Seth Rollins is not involved in the pin. You know, maybe Seth Rollins hits the curb stomp and then Bronson Reed with the splash on Lashley and goes to pin Lashley, and then Austin Theory throws Rollins and Reed out of the ring, not at the same time. I'd be very impressed by that. And that's it. But unfortunately, we do not get paid to write for WWE, so we cannot. By the way, I made coffee from my mocha pot, and if I drink this whole thing, I will be wired until tomorrow. It made like 4 cups, so it's like a quadruple espresso. So I'm going to sip it. You know, if you see me like this towards the end of the show doing a Michael J. Fox, you know, blame it on the coffee. So that is the other match that was announced yesterday. Now, obviously, we still have the 2 main events for this event, Cody Rhodes versus Brock Lesnar, one-on-one. That is a match I am absolutely looking forward to seeing. I'm starting to think more and more. Remember when we did all the comparisons to Dusty? I have this wild, you know, feeling, stronger than you think, that Cody's going to win by DQ. That I think Brock is just going to lose control and get disqualified. And if you follow the Dusty template, disqualifications absolutely necessary on the road, the chase. So I'm kind of feeling disqualification right now. And then we obviously have the 6-man tag. Matt Riddle, the lovable loser, and I say that with love. And by the way, your last chance if you want to be part of that giveaway for the autographed WWE hat, the autographed photo, and the autographed card, limited to 10. All you got to do is write the 2 magic words in the comment section from Monday's show. I'm blown away at how many people that have no idea. I posted 3 photo hints, and the 3rd one gives it away. It's 2 words. I'm just shocked at how many people that can't figure it out, but it's all good. It's all good. Listen, I say lovable loser because on SmackDown yesterday, Matt Riddle lost once again. That was one of the problems with Matt Riddle before he left for personal reasons. He would lose match after match after match. You'd be surprised how many matches he lost in singles competition. So now they bring him back now. And Wally Watkins, welcome to the family, Wally. He's back now. And, yeah, he's had a win here and there. But, you know, they're trying to keep the Usos and Solo Sikoa strong. You know, and in WWE's eyes, wins and leaving people laying kind of covers up the fact that the Usos are not tag team champions anymore. This will come back to haunt the Usos next week, because next week the Usos get their rematch against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. It's going to happen on SmackDown the same day as the draft begins, and Matt Riddle will get involved in this match. Matt Riddle will end up causing the Usos the victory, and this leads into backlash. So Matt Riddle, hopefully the bottom has fallen out as far as the losses go, because they are piling up. And, you know, we just had Solo versus Riddle on Monday, and Riddle lost, got thrown under a table. Yesterday, he throws Solo under a table. Yeah, yeah, I threw him under a table. And Solo's like, the fuck? He just throws the table off, and Riddle looks shocked, disbelief, and Solo ultimately spikes him again with the Samoan spike. So let's see what happens. Thank you, Austin Nance. I appreciate it. Thank you. And if everybody's enjoying the show, take a minute. Smash that thumbs up. You know, it really does help. You know, I don't do these shows, especially video, just to watch myself. I don't even like, I'm looking at myself like, Matt Riddle, you know, lovable loser, loses again yesterday. You know, Solo Sikoa wins. You know, his streak is over. Remember, Cody Rhodes ended his main roster winning streak. Few of you asked, do I think the bloodline will be split up on the draft? I don't think so. It would be really interesting if they were to remove Solo Sikoa from the equation. Maybe put Solo Sikoa on Raw. But I just personally feel like if it's not broken, don't try to fix it. You know what I mean? You don't need to make such a radical... Because, listen, this is not 20 years ago, you know, with some of these drafts where everybody will be talking and talking for a long time. Like, if they draft Solo on his own to Raw, like, people will complain that night and maybe a week, and then that's it. You move on. So I don't think it's worth that kind of press. So this six-man is the co-main event for Backlash. Five matches announced so far. You know, again, I expect Legado del Fantasma to get a little bit of a match that night. Who they face, I don't know. Because remember, they're also going to add Bad Bunny and Rey Mysterio versus Damian Priest and Dominic Mysterio. So, you know, that's another match right there. So the LWO, you know, like, I with all due respect, I mean, I know some of you got a little annoyed what I said last week, but I call it like I see it. I watch the LWO closely. I watch Santos Escobar closely. And I have not been impressed on his main roster run since he's been called up. Santos Escobar, you see what he was doing in Lucha Underground. You see what he was doing in NXT. They brought him to the main roster, and they watered him down so bad. And I see these people with these beautiful graphics online. Oh, I want to see them feud with this, and I want to see them feud with this. I personally think the only reason, and yes, I'm repeating myself from last week, the only reason why the LWO was even brought back and put in a storyline is to have some people align with Rey Mysterio. You know, once this Judgment Day stuff with Rey moves on, you know, I don't see Rey being the fourth man of the LWO. It just, I don't see it. And this came in about 5 minutes before we went live. This is from Sticky Fingers Frank. Santos Escobar not only lost again on SmackDown, but he came off looking stupid, not knowing Priest was the legal man at the end of the match. My thoughts. Thank you, Frank, for the five spot. Yeah, we had the same dumb finish that we complain about over and over and over again. You know, oh, Natty didn't see the lead. You know, Rhea's not the legal person. Or they do that so many times on SmackDown. I mean, it is almost every week that that happens. Yesterday, we had a fun tag team match with Rey Mysterio and Santos Escobar versus Damian Priest and Finn Balor. It was your typical, you know, WWE televised match, Raw match, SmackDown match. But what ends up happening is Damian Priest is the legal man during the match. Finn Balor is getting his ass kicked from Rey Mysterio. So Rey Mysterio, now, I had to go back right before we went live and just see the moment that Frank was talking about him looking stupid. Yes, I remember the commentary of Michael Cole that Damian Priest was a legal man. But when you go back and you watch the end of that match, when Damian Priest was tagged in, Santos Escobar was looking right at him. So, you know, just suspension of disbelief. Santos Escobar, you know, professional, should know that Damian Priest, the legal man. So Rey hits the 619 to Finn Balor, and here comes Santos Escobar jumping off the top rope. And unfortunately, Finn Balor was not the legal man. So Damian Priest comes in, hits his South of Heaven chokeslam on Santos Escobar. Santos Escobar is pinned once again. And I decided to check really quick some of Santos' stats since coming to the main roster. I needed to pull stats when we talk about Mercedes Moné in a few minutes, the former Sasha Banks. I don't know how you all going to react to it, but it's definitely something that needs to be addressed. So, Santos Escobar, since coming to the main roster, okay, in 2023, we're just focusing on this year. Santos Escobar, since being on the main roster, is 4-13. Since mid-March and the formation of the LWO, how many wins do you think Santos Escobar has? Chat room. Since mid-March, going into WrestleMania, aligning themselves with Rey Mysterio, turning babyface, and, you know, creating the LWO, how many matches do you think he has won? I'll give you a hint. He's had 9 matches. Marvin says 0. JS says 0. Iman says 0. Aleske, Lindsay, Christopher, Franz, Marvin, Michael. Michael's the only one that said more than 0. 2. The answer is 0. Santos Escobar is 0-9 since the formation of the LWO. Since he aligned with Rey Mysterio. Maybe he should turn heel again. You know, I align with you, I lose. I lose over and over and over again. I lose. This sucks. And don't even look up Cruz del Toro and the other Matarazzo stats. It's all about perception. And these people are fantasizing, oh, I want to see them feud with the Hurt Business. I want to see them feud with the Bloodline. I want to see them feud with this. You know, feud with Curt Hawkins. At least somebody's streak will be lost. You know, will be ended. Like, this is futility. And it's all a cover-up, in my honest opinion. I just feel that WWE never had any real deep faith for Legado del Fantasma. Just being straight up. And you know what? I think it's time to show this little post. Jason Salamonsta. Jason posted this literally 5 minutes before I went live. And this is what he said. With Vince McMahon sniffing around creative again, it's easy to just blame all the bad stuff and give Triple H a pass. The truth is, the booking of the women's division in the WWE has been worse since Triple H has taken over creative. Put the blame where it belongs. Spot on. You know, I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but when Triple H first was taking over creative last year, and everybody, you know, when they re-signed Hit Row and they re-signed this person and brought back this person and Candice LeRae came back and this and that, and I'm not throwing shade against any of those talents. You know, it's not just what they do themselves. It's the position that they're put in, the opportunity that they're given. And every time there would be a signing, you had all this noise. You know, Triple H, Booker of the Year, righting the wrongs of Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon released Cross, he released this, and, you know, Triple H is righting all the wrongs. And you look, Emma's like the perfect example. Emma, I would put at the top of the list, Tennille Dashwood. If anybody out there spent a little bit of time watching her work in Impact Wrestling before she went back to WWE, this woman should be in the upper tier. And you see what is going on. And I said this when Triple H was put in head of creative in August, I think it was, of last year. I said it almost every month. And because it's more anti-Vince, majority of people out there ignored it. And I'll say it again now. Triple fucking H has been with WWE since the mid-90s. Triple H has been in the offices for well over a decade. Even longer. Triple H has come up with his own creative storylines back in the day. Some were horrendous, awful. So I'm not throwing hate on Triple H. I absolutely appreciate what he does, and I'm so thankful that he is still able to do what he does. And I do miss him in the ring. But the problem I always had were all these people that were calling Triple H an outsider. That he was this beautiful magician in NXT. He was doing insane things in NXT. Yeah, he drew 700,000 viewers, 600,000 viewers. You know, oh, but it's amazing, epic, unbelievable. Well, guess what? This is a billion-dollar company. This is not MLW. This is not no regional promotion. That 600,000 viewers is tremendous, amazing, unbelievable, awesome. Give him a fucking raise. You know, the fact is that a lot of the people from NXT, some of them that went to AEW are drawing similar ratings, similar quarter hours. You know, some wrestlers, you know, are better perceived as off-Broadway stars. You know, are extremely talented, but as far as attracting the masses, you know, you know, that may not be the case. And you'll see Triple H, and people are perceiving him as an outsider. You know, when Triple H took a step back and had these heart issues, and nobody knew how serious it was early on, and yet people were like, oh, Triple H, you know, his legacy is being erased. Remember all that? WWE is erasing everything, ruining and killing everything that Triple H created. And with all due respect, you know, he was never an outsider. And you see these matches, and you see, oh, you know, that person won't realize, that person's not the legal person. Every other week, we point that out. That person, oh, you know, he wasn't the legal man. You got some dumb motherfuckers wrestling on SmackDown, especially SmackDown, because it happens on SmackDown more than on Raw. You know, so stop with this, oh, Vince is in creative, Vince is back in creative. You know, Triple H, with all due respect, the reason why I choose Triple H over Vince right now is because Triple H will at least give some people additional opportunity. You see Bronson Reed getting some opportunity still, pushing the narrative with Karrion Kross. Now he's feuding with Shinsuke. And even repackaging Shinsuke. Yesterday, that video package with Shinsuke was great. Them focusing on the strong style. I mean, they should have shown something like that when he first came up to the main roster way back in the day. But the thing is, giving a little bit better opportunity is fine. Creatively, though, if that doesn't go along with it, there's a problem. There's a problem. And, you know, it's just people got to stop, you know, with this, you know, scapegoat that, you know, Triple H is this and Triple H doesn't do that. And Triple H is definitely better than 80-year-old Vince McMahon in creative. Absolutely. He's allowing people to have longer matches. And listen, not everything is bad. Look at what he's done for Gunther. Look at what he has done for some others. You know, it's funny. You know, Butch changes his profile name to Pete Dunne online like 6 weeks ago. And everybody's like, oh, thank you, Triple H. Thank you. And it goes back to the Viking experience. I don't give a fuck what his name is. And I think I still even have an autographed Butch photo laying around over here. Yes, I do. And it's JSA authenticated. Look. You know, I don't give a fuck if he's called Pete Dunne or Butch. I just want to see him get opportunity and succeed. You know, like people are all focused like, oh, they used local medical facility instead of hospital. Oh, I should turn the TV off? Like, the things that people stick to is weird. Let's be honest. It's kind of fucking weird. I see a lot of this buzz in the chat room about JD. He has a right to his opinions on it. I'm not sitting trashing him or criticizing him in any way. If you tune into JD's shows and that's his viewpoint on it, he has every right of that viewpoint as I do. And listen, I've pointed this out before. I don't know if you've noticed, but there's a handful of podcasters out there that are trying to be, you know, JD Light. Like they've taken JD's template and they are riding with it. You see their Twitter, their social media. You got the all these variations of JD from New York. The reason why it'll never be JD from New York, with all due respect, is because at least JD offers solutions. He offers, you know, opinions. He tries to come up with things that would make things better. These other people don't have a fucking clue. You could write a catchy tweet about, you know, Triple H and Vince McMahon and this and that, and it's an emotional tweet and people will react to it. But you see, there's no solutions. It's just complain, complain, complain. You go online, you got the 60-year-old version of JD from New York. You got the black version of JD from New York. You got the Jewish version of JD from New York. You got the female edition version of JD from New York. You know, I'm not going to name any names. You could figure it out yourself. But I'm looking around. I'm like, you know, it's like that from Spaceballs. I'm surrounded by assholes. I'm surrounded by all JDs from now. But, you know, the difference is JD offers solutions. And these people, they don't offer any solutions. Just look around. Just see. There's always complaint, 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 complaint. And you're like, oh, how would you fix that?
Oh, when you want to pay me to fix it, then I'll give you solutions.
Oh, lick my balls. I don't think there's any JD hate from the chat. I think just people, you know, look, there's a lot of hate towards me in a lot of other people's chats. It happens. But JD is a friend and a family, and he definitely has his opinions. They don't always agree with mine, but, you know, one thing that I will never do is I will never offer my opinion because it might offend someone else. You know, I give my opinions because that's how I feel, not to anger anybody else. But you look at the women's division, you look at it, you know, it's really, other than a couple of people, you know, it's just throw shit on the wall and see what sticks. You know, you look at Nikki Cross and you look at some other stuff. I mean, they got rid of the 24/7 title. And believe it or not, I almost kind of wish that it would come back, you know, in some capacity, maybe in a little bit. You know what? Maybe the 24/7 title comes back as the hardcore title. Once Endeavor takes over and we get some adult programming, some TV-14 programming, maybe they bring back the 24/7 title as the hardcore title and we actually get some, you know, less than comedic matches going on. Maybe that happens. All right. So, yesterday on SmackDown, let's just run down the rest of SmackDown. Shinsuke Nakamura, they had a video package showing a little bit more of his martial arts skills. This leads to a promo by Karrion Kross with Scarlett. And Karrion Kross, you know, says, you know, the reason why he is taking out everything on everyone is because of the tarot cards. He took away Drew McIntyre's temperament. He took away Riddick Moss's joy. Madcap Moss, excuse me. He took away Rey Mysterio's patience. And for Shinsuke Nakamura, he's going to take away his honor. So whatever the tarot cards say, that's what Karrion Kross does. Now, somebody, you know, just said, oh, what about Jeff Hardy? What did he take away from him? Well, the tarot cards weren't involved at that time. At that time, it was a mask. There was a mask. There was no tarot cards. In my opinion, Karrion Kross should pull a tarot card with his own picture on it. Stop the tarot cards. 99% of wrestling fans probably don't give a shit about tarot cards. Karrion Kross is so good on the mic and is great in the ring. And he is actually going to have some phenomenal stiff matches with Shinsuke Nakamura. There's no need for this tarot card stuff. I know the presentation is great. The presentation is great, you know, but at the end of the day, the tarot cards made me do it. You know, I like when he says, you know, hey, I didn't hurt anybody. Cross my heart. You know, like, I like that, but tarot cards, I'm not feeling it. I honestly want to see in the near future, Karrion Kross, they put the tarot cards on the table. He looks down and you see the white of his eyes and he walks off and the tarot card has Karrion Kross on it. Get rid of the tarot cards. It's not needed. I don't know whose idea it was to come up with tarot cards. It was good early on. And you know what? The promo yesterday at least gave some direction as far as why he went at it with Drew, why he went at it with Moss, why he went at it with Ray, you know, but there's got to be more now. There's got to be more. You know, he's got to start fucking with people simply because he doesn't like them. I don't like you. You know, and why don't you do something about it? Like shit like that. Not, you know, the tarot card made me do it. Yeah, I know I'm oversimplifying it, but I'm looking forward to Kross versus Nakamura. But just to give you my honest opinion, I think Kross needs to get rid of the tarot cards. So let the tarot cards get drafted to NXT. So we have that to look forward to. That match is not happening at Backlash, by the way. which I don't think it should either. We had Team Jacked, Tanned, and Juicy defeat the Viking Raiders. Yeah, that's what Michael Cole called the tag team yesterday of Ricochet and Braun Strowman. This match was kind of Is that what Paul Heyman said on Raw? This match was kind of clink. It had a lot of clinks in it. You know, I like the pairing of Ricochet and Braun. I like that Braun, because he's so strong, could use Ricochet like a weapon. And Ricochet uses Braun to let, you know, to help him be a weapon. But the problem is, and I've talked about this so many times, it's timing. And it's your opponents as well. And there was one point during the match yesterday where Braun Strowman was going to pick up Ricochet from the corner and throw him into Ivar of the Viking Raiders. And the Viking Raiders, you know, I hate to say this, if you look closely, they are a little bit too slow. They're a little bit too slow. Their timing is not bad, but unfortunately you're dealing with a very in-shape Braun Strowman, an extremely agile and fast Ricochet, and they're just, their timing and their placement is not there. So what happens? Braun Strowman picks up Ricochet, throws him at Ivar, and Ivar's too far on the opposite side of the ring, and Ricochet just plops in front of Ivar. And Ivar's just looking at him like, what do we do now? What do we do now? And there was a couple of moments like that in the match yesterday, but in the end, the Viking Raiders lost. And, you know, I want the Viking, I don't know what you do with the Viking Raiders. They had them destroy the New Day. They had them go to NXT. They had them go after fucking, you know, other people, Braun and nothing. Let's be honest. Even if you're a huge fan of the Viking Raiders, and I like Sarah Logan. Sarah Logan's doing a fine job. But, you know, every time I hear Valhalla is here, it's like, I don't know, man. It's just, I'm not feeling it. Tell me the last time the Viking Raiders were in a feud with a team and they came out looking better than they were before. Seriously. The only time they came out looking better was their vignettes when they brought back Sarah Logan. The vignettes were great, but so were the Xia Li vignettes in NXT and the main roster. And Xia Li, look at what WWE's done with her. Even Lacey Evans, to an extent. We know what they were trying to do with Lacey Evans with the vignettes. And once she's out there, look what's done. It's like, you know, the vignettes, when the vignettes are better over a period of time than what people are doing in the ring, there's a problem. There's a problem with the Viking Raiders. And again, this goes back to the Bronson Reed thing. When you have so many fucking big men in that company, and some, unfortunately, do not connect with the fans, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? It's just like when everybody does flippy-flippy, nobody does flippy-flippy. We were joking the other day, even with Britt Baker. I have nothing against Britt Baker, but Britt Baker takes a couple of cane shots, and Adam Cole is about to have a heart attack over it. I'm sorry. You know, like, she's gone through thumbtacks and glass and tables and blood and all this other stuff and a couple of Singapore canes. I'm supposed to, like, get rattled over? You know, it's like, you know, that's why you don't just do all this over-the-top hardcore stuff simply because it looks great on a fucking shirt. Because when you do stuff like that later on, you know, it doesn't feel like all like that big of a deal. So it was funny when I saw people on Wednesday, they were like, oh, well, Adam Cole now is full-blown babyface. I'm like, you didn't like realize that when he first announced he was returning back to the ring or All Access the last couple of weeks or, you know, when all of confetti came down. Yeah. So yesterday's tag match, kind of less to be desired. Another tag match was okay, but the outcome was too predictable. You had Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez retain the tag titles over Chelsea Green and Sonya Deville. You know, basically water got involved once again. You know, last week, you know, Chelsea Green throws water on Liv. Yesterday, Liv gets a little bit of revenge, and then, you know, she gets an assist from Raquel Rodriguez, and they defeat her. Now Chelsea Green's going to complain that, you know, Liv cheated and water was involved in this and that. You know, it's just the women's division, like Jason said earlier, you look at it overall, with the exception of a couple of people, it is really, really stuck in the mud. You know, that's why I'm really hoping they bring back Kairi Sane. One person is not going to fix everything. You know, but Kairi Sane versus Asuka, reforming that tag team, would instantly upgrade that tag team women's division. Because Asuka is not dethroning Bianca Belair anytime soon. Nobody is dethroning Rhea Ripley anytime soon. So what do you do with all these other women? What do you do with all these other women? You know, you look at even the Raw roster. Like, who feuds with Bianca Belair next? Io Sky? Okay. All right. And then what? We're going to go back to Bayley? You know, I think, you know, like I said, when we do the preview, I think Lacey Evans is going to Raw. And I think we'll probably see a Lacey Evans-Bianca Belair feud. And we got to see who comes up for the main roster. I'm still holding out hope that Mandy Rose is coming back. I think Mandy Rose, especially with Endeavor, you know, and WWE forming this new corporation, the, you know, we talked about it 2 weeks ago that we will see some TV-14 programming return. And then 5 days later, Nick Khan did an interview and said, you know, we're considering Blood, TV-14 for a third hour of Raw. I'll take it. You know what I mean? Like, this is not going to be your kiddie, you know, WWE anymore. This is predominantly owned by Endeavor, who runs UFC. And you see all the shows they have, that fucking slap shit and all that. You know, this is not, you know, where everything has got to be family friendly. And, you know, they're probably going to lose some advertisers over it. So, but that's why with these TV deals being negotiated, it's different now. Because these TV networks know that down the line, later this year, World Wrestling Entertainment Incorporated is no more. Like, if you follow the last couple of days, you see this buzz online, like, massive layoffs coming. Duh. We said that the day of the Endeavor deal. If World Wrestling Entertainment Incorporated has 25 people in accounts payable and Endeavor has 25 people in accounts payable, they're not simply going to now have 50 people in accounts payable. Somebody's going to have to go. And that's what happens. You know, like if I buy out another business and I form it into one business, you know, I don't need two secretaries. I don't need two of this. I don't need five of that. Maybe I only need three of that. So, I mean, they try. It's common sense. As far as wrestlers, some wrestlers are going to be released. Not because of this deal. It's going to be because they're not bringing it. We get releases every year. We get releases every year. The reason why you're not seeing as many releases right now from WWE, let me put it like this. The reason why you did not see as many releases in 2022 is not because WWE was too busy trying to like work out a deal in the Vince McMahon, you know, controversy. No, it's because in 2020 and 2021, they really streamlined their roster. They streamlined their roster during COVID because they weren't touring. They didn't need 150 wrestlers, 200 wrestlers. I mean, if you look at this draft, I mean, this is pretty much their roster. That is their roster. When you start adding it up, that roster used to be almost double. So when you are already streamlined, you don't have to release as many people. But as they bring up some NXT stars, you're going to see some people released. But they're already streamlined. So the cuts are going to be more in the office than anything else. And that's common sense. So, all right. Wrapping up SmackDown, as we said earlier, Solo Sikoa beats Matt Riddle in a no DQ match. The Usos come out, cut a promo, you know, making sure everybody in the back of their mind realize the Usos are out there with Solo. Matt Riddle is Solo, pun intended. And that would come into play later on because the Usos would get involved. Matt Riddle had the upper hand. You know, this was no DQ and tossed Solo over the table, dropped the table on top of him. Yay! I got my revenge. So you thought. He even did the floating bro onto the Usos, but then here comes Solo. Just throws the table off like, you know, just no-selling it completely. And Riddle is just shocked. And then they have a little back and forth. Solo originally misses the zone. Samoan Spike doesn't miss the second time. Nails Riddle. Riddle's out cold. We go off the air. Once again, Riddle loses to Solo Sikoa due to the assistance from the Usos. And, you know, again, hopefully that'll be the rock bottom for Matt Riddle. I mean, he will continue to lose matches, but not on the pace that he's been. And it's not losing because he was out and he returned and now they're making him eat some humble pie. That's not it at all. It's just they got to keep Solo Sikoa strong going into Backlash, and they got to try to cover up a little bit of the fact that the Usos are not tag champs anymore. Usos made history. The Bloodline went from having six titles to two. So, you know, they have to cover up that aspect of it. You would think in storyline that everything should be about the Usos getting these tag titles back. So when Riddle does help Owens and Zayn retain those titles next week, it's going to mean even more, and it's supposed to intensify the six-man tag match that's going to happen at Backlash. So, all right. So, you know, overall, yesterday it was not a bad edition of SmackDown, but, you know, it's not a whole lot amazed me. The one match that I definitely want to bring up, which I thought should have gone twice as long, is Gunther and Xavier Woods. Out of all the matches yesterday, that was the match I was looking forward to. Did I think Xavier Woods had any chance of winning? No. Yesterday, almost every match went 10 minutes. I mean, the matches, usually we get four matches on SmackDown. Yesterday we have five, which was good. But Gunther and Xavier Woods only went about 10 minutes. It actually went shorter than some other matches. And I know what some of you are going to say out there. Gunther is so dominant, he shouldn't have 10-minute matches. I get it. But the fact is that Gunther has had long matches. And people enjoy Gunther making magic in the ring with someone so much. I know some fans will use a chant called Fight Forever. And no, I don't think I wanted to see Xavier Woods and Gunther fight forever. But they put on a fun little match yesterday. And there's no reason why it couldn't have gone at least another 5 or 6 minutes. But I think because they threw five matches at us yesterday instead of four, and because of some of the other shenanigans that went on, they were short for time. And Gunther ended up defeating Xavier Woods and retains the championship. And Gunther going into the draft, it's going to be really interesting to see where this goes. Gunther is one of my favorites, if not my favorite wrestler on the main roster right now. I want to see who comes up from NXT. I want to listen. I know a lot of people aren't thinking about this, but I could see, absolutely see WWE bringing a match back for main roster purposes. And that's Ilya versus Gunther. And if some of you out there have never seen the NXT match with Ilya versus Gunther from last year, you got to go out of your way to watch it. Because if you enjoyed Sheamus versus Gunther, Ilya versus Gunther is on a whole different level. Tyler Bate, I don't know about that. Tyler Bate, the only reason why I think I know why Tyler Bate is people are writing it because a lot of podcasters keep mentioning Tyler Bate's name. Tyler Bate, the only reason why I would bring him to the main roster is because they have nothing for him in NXT right now. He's like an honorary member of Chase University. And it's like, this is the best you have for Tyler Bate. And once you bring Tyler Bate to the main roster, what are you going to do? You're going to have him fight Ludwig Kaiser. And some hardcore people are going to enjoy it. Fans will appreciate it. And that'll get as old as Legado del Fantasma in the ring. Unfortunately, there is no other WWE Hall of Famer that could align with them and call them something. You know, it's, yeah, nah. But like I said, on Tuesday, you know, Kevin and I will more than likely do our draft preview predictions. We'll throw some wild card picks out there, and then we will see how everything goes. So if you are interested, I didn't even know this was coming out. Doesn't look bad, but it also makes you take a step back and you're like, wow, you know, there's a lot of things that Steve Austin has never done in his life that we have all done. A&E has a TV series coming out called Stone Cold Takes on America. I know in a parallel world, that would be a bad adult movie. I still remember when I was a kid, what was it, Tracy Takes Tokyo or something like that? I don't know. That's when, you know, I was in my teenage years. But Stone Cold Takes on America. It premieres April 30th. It's going to be every Sunday. They're going to do one of these. And here's the synopsis of it. Stone Cold Steve Austin gave everything to wrestling, becoming one of the all-time greats. However, his dedication to his career meant sacrificing many of the other experiences life has to offer. Just a little side note. How long has Steve Austin retired? All his time? He still didn't do this stuff? Didn't we have shows of him like in the mountains? I don't know. This show sounds like it should have come out maybe like 10 years ago. But anyway, in Stone Cold Takes on America, Steve Austin hits the road in his RV, accepting challenges from fans that push him out of his comfort zone and make up for the lost time. Through archival footage from classic WWE moments and his own stories, the series weaves together Austin's old and new life, both filled with incredible feats and his unique point of view, as he celebrates and learns from new experiences how only Stone Cold Steve Austin can. April 30th's debut. Steve Austin hits the road in an RV journey through adventures he had never had as a wrestling superstar, including bowling with seniors, riding the rim of a 600-foot-high mountain of sand, and learning the art of cocktail creation. May 7th, Steve jumps into action at a drive-through window at a fast food restaurant. RVs over to an axe-throwing spot to master a new sport, and learns the fast and furious ways of formula drifting. Steve learns a trick from legendary Las Vegas mentalist? I don't know. Just my honest opinion, that show should have come out like in 2010. But hey, we'll see what happens. Mercedes Moné. I'm a fan, but, you know, you got to sometimes reel some people in. Little wake-up call. Mercedes Moné, the former Sasha Banks, talked to Sports Illustrated. And she says that, you know, there's a lot of rumors that her last match in Japan will be Sunday. And she says that is not the case whatsoever. She is in the process of finding a permanent residence in Japan. She is also learning to speak Japan. People know why I said that. She said she's riding the train. She's eating the food. She's not here for a quick second when it comes to Japan. She says that she's enjoying her freedom, wrestling for New Japan and Stardom, saying that in the United States, you're told what to do and what to say and how to say it, but in Japan, she feels free. She says, and I quote, "Here, I'm creating every single moment. I feel so free. I've never been this confident, and it's significant to me because I'm inspiring people to follow their dreams." And she says that she's finally getting the opportunity to create the magic. Here's the last two comments that we got to reel it in with some facts. Comment number one. She said that she's finally getting to create the magic she always wanted to create, and her ideas are not being limited, and she's not constantly hearing that matches are being cut short. She's had two matches in Japan. Her last match went 13 minutes. What is she talking about that she doesn't hear that her matches are being constantly being cut short? You've had two matches. One of them went 13 minutes. You know, if you have 50 matches, 10 matches, 20 matches, and they're long and they're not cut short, then you have the right to say that. You don't just have one or two matches say, see here, they don't cut my matches short. You only have fucking two matches. Last quote. I'm not going to hold back. I'm not the greatest women's wrestler. I'm the greatest wrestler. When you think of John Cena, The Rock, or Kenny Omega, I won't stop until people are thinking of Mercedes Moné in the same light. Okay. My friends, how many matches do you think she has had in the last 12 months? How many matches? Can't say none because she's had two in Japan. She's wrestled last year. How many matches do you think she's had in the last 12 months? Singles matches. Singles matches. Not tag team. Singles matches. She's had three. In the last 12 months, she's had three singles matches. Remember, in Japan, she's already had a three-way match. So she has had one singles match in Japan. Three singles matches in the last 12 months. I think the other two matches were against Shayna Baszler and Charlotte Flair. I don't think you're going to be in the same sentence of John Cena, The Rock, Kenny Omega, or anybody else when you have had three matches in a year. You know, I mean, let's keep this in perspective, everyone. You know, she has had two matches since everything with Japan. We're approaching May. So let's wait a year. Let her have 10, 15, 20 matches under her belt. Then we can revisit this. You know, you have one singles match in Japan. I don't want to be in the same sentence of, I'm the greatest of all time. Listen, of course it's a catchphrase. Of course it's confidence, but it's not realistic. And I just want to point that out. So, now the negative out of all of this is this. No stardom money for you. I get to reuse this thumbnail. Trinity, the former Naomi in WWE. We knew this was coming, friends. We talked about it when they were at conventions, modeling stuff, runways, movie premieres, autograph signings. At some point, some people are going to be like, we want her. We don't want her. It's nothing against Trinity, but they're not sisters. They're sisters from other misters. They're not, you know, husband and wife or wife and wife. You know, they're not this legendary tag team like the Road Warriors. They wrestled for a short time and they walked out together. At some point, when it comes down to business, Mercedes Moné don't do this for free. Mercedes Moné breaks the bank, pun intended. So now she signs a deal with Stardom to work a little bit. And now Trinity, No. New Japan, Stardom, you got to watch your money. Bushiroad, they're the ones that I think own the two. You got to be careful with the money. No. The well has dried. We have no money for you. Now, do I think Trinity will work in Japan? Yes, I do. But she will not get a long-term contract with Stardom, New Japan. No. Maybe she will appear for a couple of shots, but you knew at some point, it's not like Hulk Hogan and Jimmy Hart. Like wherever Hulk Hogan goes, brother, you gotta bring the mouth of the South with me, brother. You know, or a Knobs. You know, like at some point you knew that they were going to go to a company and the company's only going to want one. And that's what's happening right now. So Trinity, as of right now, is not inked a deal. Again, I expect her to ink something, but it's not going to be on the realm. And you know what some people are going to do online. If the specifics aren't made publicly, people will just, you know, lie and make it seem much bigger than what it is, you know, or make it seem that, you know, that her involvement or her emphasis or importance is a lot higher than expected. Fact of the matter is that they want the Mercedes. They want the Sasha. Trinity, oh, nice, you know, but not for the money that she thinks she's getting. So right now for Trinity, no startup money for you. All right. Let's bring this home. Oh, yes, we got to bring this up. This is worth it. Recently, we've been talking about Dynamite ratings. And we've been talking about how the main eventers are drawing the lowest ratings of the night. Dynamite is not 3 hours long. Dynamite ends at 10 o'clock, reasonable time. FTR fought the Guns recently. Titles versus career. Think about the magnitude of that. If FTR would have lost, they would have been out of AEW. If they would have won, they would have become tag champs. Either outcome is very important. So what happens? They drew the lowest rating of the entire show. Okay. Blame it on shootings. Blame it on politics. Blame it on a hurricane. Blame it on the rain. Blame it on the rain. You know, blame it on whatever you want. Okay. You know, blip. Next week, Chris Jericho versus Keith Lee. Maybe they, you know, would pop a number. Lowest rating of the night. Adam Cole. First match back in 7 months. Streamers. Daniel Garcia. Emotion. Tears. Happiness. Uneasiness. His first match back in 7 months. Adam Cole. Lowest rating of that night. Adam Cole's return match. FTR, titles or die. Jericho versus Keith Lee. All entire night. Lowest rating. This past Wednesday, we had the Pillars fight in the main event. And it was Sammy Guevara versus Jungle Boy. MJF gets involved at ringside. So the Pillars are main eventing Dynamite. Were they the lowest rating of the night? I am happy to say with an asterisk that no, they broke the streak. However, the lowest quarter of the night was the one prior. This was the Jericho Appreciation Society versus the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn, which we have pointed out for a while now that the Acclaimed is starting to draw shit numbers. That was the lowest quarter of the entire night. That drew 761,000 viewers. That was the lowest quarter of the night. I don't give a fuck what's been on. Playoffs were not on 3 weeks ago, a month ago. You know what it is? AEW fans chose to do something else than watch Dynamite. Period. When the playoffs draw shit, I don't ever see somebody go, din, 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 din. Well, you know, AEW was on, so our ratings were not as good as we wanted it to be. Why am I dancing? Anyway, the lowest quarter of the night was that quarter, 761,000 viewers. Remember that number, 761. What did Jungle Boy and Sammy draw? 762. 1,000 viewers. They avoided the streak by 1,000 viewers. That's pretty wild, man. But you know what's interesting, too? I got to get for you, maybe for Monday I'll get it. I got to get for you what the actual rating was for Adam Cole's match, for Jericho and Keith Lee's match, for FTR and the Guns match, and this past Wednesday. I think they're all around the same exact number, whether it was playoffs on or nothing. See, you know, when it, Mike when, and anyone else would, as far as playoffs, I've been doing this 27 years and I've been saying the same thing for 27 years. You know, when wrestling is drawing crazy good numbers, I don't, in all my life, I never heard producers at Survivor or sports or anything else turn around and say, well, you know, wrestling was on last night and, you know, they got hammered us really good. For some reason, wrestling fans are the only ones to make excuses for low ratings. I mean, not even like news outlets or entertainment outlets out there. They never blame one for the other. The bottom line is that fans could DVR sports and watch wrestling live. But in a lot of cases, they do the opposite. Back in the day, I could guarantee you that I watched wrestling live, and if I had a baseball game or something to watch, I would record it on a VCR in the other room, and I would watch it later on, and I would skip through the commercials, and that's it. It's just a matter of choice. People choose to do something else than watch your product. NXT is a big problem. NXT's been in the fives. And 2 weeks in a row, they've put on some pretty damn good shows. They're still in the fives. There's no playoffs for the most part. And here, I'll give you a better one. I'll give you a better one. Explain to me why Raw still does great numbers while the playoffs are on. Why is that? Nobody talks about playoffs when Raw's got a decent rating, but the playoffs were on. SmackDown, playoffs are on, yet SmackDown still draws a great rating. It comes down to your fans are choosing to do or watch something else than your product. End of story. End of story. Okay, so let's finish this show talking a little bit of truth about the CM Punk situation. I want to start off with Chris Cutcher's 1999 Super Chat. Thank you, Chris. So does it say something about how certain media protects AEW when none of them are talking about how it's obviously a bad look and leadership failure that Punk's having to keep separate from guys that don't want him around? Okay. This is cute, everyone. This is cute. Chat room. Maybe there's a little bit of a quiz. Who is CM Punk's first rumored feud to be with upon his return? Friends, who is CM Punk's first feud rumored to, who's his first rumored feud? Everybody's reporting the same person. Michael says Chris Jericho. Kenny says Chris Jericho. Mark says Kenny Omega. It's not Kenny Omega, but it's Chris Jericho. Now, remember the report. This is what Brian Alvarez said a week and a half ago. What I heard from the beginning, anytime this was brought up, is that people don't want to work with CM Punk. They don't want to be in the building with him. So there's going to be a place where he can work and do his thing, and there's going to be a place where the other people who support Punk can work and do their thing. If you're a neutral party, then conceivably you could work both shows and everything like that, but there's going to be certain people that are on one show and certain people that are going to be on another show because they don't want to be anywhere near each other. Okay? My friends, I will quit these shows if CM Punk is not on Dynamite this year. They're putting out this narrative that CM Punk is returning, but there are a lot of people in AEW that dislike him, that don't want to be around him. So CM Punk is going to get the Mike Awesome treatment from ECW when he signed with WCW. They're going to bring him into the building. He's going to be in a different building. He's going to do this, going to do that, and then they're going to make him leave. Okay. On top of it, I have been saying for the last 2 weeks on these shows, and I've said it many, many times, that you're going to start seeing all these elite whack jobs out there starting to normalize CM Punk's return by saying that, you know what, at the end of the day, if it makes money for AEW, if they're doing it for the fans and doing it for the betterment of AEW, then, you know, in the end, it's all worth it. So now Dave Meltzer has thrown something out there. And unfortunately, not him, but unfortunately a lot of other journalists and unfortunately just everyday viewers may need to Google the word, the definition of the word, if. They need to Google the definition of the word if. Because Dave Meltzer said, get this, is that CM Punk was extremely important for AEW to get this new Saturday show called Collision. And Dave theorizes, Google the definition of theorizes as well. He's coming up with a theory. Maybe an answer. That if WarnerMedia even pays AEW their median rate for primetime programming, AEW gets another $52 million. If. So what do you see everywhere right now? CM Punk instrumental in getting AEW $52 million more. If. Didn't Dave just say a month ago, you know, I should have reached out for CM Punk for comment? What do I always say on these shows? What do these journalists never say? We reached out for blah, 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 blah for a comment and received no reply. Did any of these journalists reach out to WarnerMedia? I know what you're going to say. Well, DT, it's premature. Nothing's been announced yet, so nobody's going to open their mouth. Well, then maybe you shouldn't be fucking saying it. Dave Meltzer said if. Dave Meltzer gave a theory. If AEW does. If. And how do you even know what time the fucking show's going to be on? I'm not saying it's going to be on at midnight. If. You basically do a little bit of Google searching. And you look, what does WarnerMedia pay for a primetime show on a Saturday? $52 million. CM Punk instrumental on that. See, they're trying to normalize CM Punk being separated from the elite. They're trying to normalize it. The more these morons outside of the original reporters, I'm not talking about the Meltzer, but I'm talking about everyone else. The more those other people normalize it, you know, keep saying it, the more it's normal. And at the end of the day, it's like Jericho as Ring of Honor heavyweight champion to pitch it to a network. Hey, we have Chris Jericho. He is the champion. Put Ring of Honor on the network. Nah, I don't think so. So now they're using that narrative for CM Punk. Hey, look, at the end of the day, he's bringing in $50 million. You know why they're using the $50 million number too? $52 million? 52? Not just a million per... You think it's just, we give you $1 million per week. 52 weeks out of the year. $52 million. No, they just want it a little bit higher than what Saudi Arabia pays WWE. WWE WrestleMania gets 80,000. We need to get 90,000. WWE gets 50 million for Saudi Arabia. He need to get 52 million. Everything's got to be a little higher. I mean, it's pretty obvious, but here's where it really gets fucked up. We've talked about this common sense before. Who is going to handle the behind the scenes of these shows for Collision? Some of the people that work in production, some of the people that work in creative, some of the people that work in the offices of AEW do not like CM Punk at all. And as I've said before, you're not going to tell your roster, hey, anybody that likes CM Punk that doesn't like the Elite or prefers to work with CM Punk, you could go to Saturdays. And you're telling me that the EVPs and everybody that works behind the scenes, when they see certain talents that say, oh, I want to work with Punk, I don't want to work with those guys, that, oh, yeah, oh, that, you know, we respect your honesty. We will still put the title on you. It is fucking stupid. Plus, could you imagine, think about this for a minute. You know, we're not talking about people on Twitter. We're talking about billionaires, millionaires, people that don't even watch wrestling. Could you imagine AEW going to Warner and talking about, you know, hey, you know, we want to do this show Collision, this and that, and look, you know, we got this CM Punk, and he will be the head of it. And then you find out that CM Punk has been out with a pretty serious injury, who's been injured multiple times, and also had a physical altercation and walked out, and there's been this so-called investigation, and he wanted to quit before, and, you know, before even the match with Moxley last year, he wanted to quit. You put that out to management, they're going to laugh at you. They'd be like, go finish your smoke. Like, you tell me how you present in a meeting with Warner Media to sell them on CM Punk. Oh, yes, tell me more. And you're actually going to sell the Warner Media that the roster is could be convinced of, consists of people who are neutral and people who prefer to work with CM Punk that don't want to work with the other people. You know, what are we going to end up with? The real housewives, the real wrestlers of Elite? Like, this is not a reality show. And here's where my thumbnail comes in. The thumbnail I showed you before. Why report the actual story when you can be part of the story? All of these journalists that are feeding this shit right now are pushing a certain narrative, pushing a story. I'll give you a good example of it. Did you see the report that came out on Friday that CM Punk has not apologized to the Young Bucks? And then later on in the same paragraph, it says that CM Punk was told not to talk to the Young Bucks. The first part of it makes CM Punk look like an asshole. He has yet to issue an apology. First of all, why the fuck does he have to apologize in the first place? And why do the Young Bucks not have to apologize? But if I'm told, don't talk to so-and-so, and then I don't talk to so-and-so, and then somebody says, do you know that Don Tony has not yet talked to so-and-so, not apologized to him? You see the game that's being played. Right now, I'm going on record to say this. I have nothing against Nick Houseman. Nick Houseman has a lot of people that support him. And I know his intentions were good. But Nick Houseman was the one that CM Punk went after at that media scrum for good reason. Because when that Colt Cabana rumor first came out, nobody went to CM Punk for comment. Nobody went to Colt Cabana for comment. Instead, on a Ring of Honor media scrum, if anybody that doesn't remember the history, on a Ring of Honor media scrum around WrestleMania of last year, Nick Houseman asked, I think it was Tony Khan about it. Tony Khan didn't know anything about it. You know, he said he'll get, you know, I think he said he'd get back to him, something like that. But when Nick Houseman put the question out there, he said it that he heard reports. He heard reports of so-and-so. He put it out there, even though he had nothing to substantiate it. And for the next 8 months, you had journalists, podcasters, everyone else blowing this shit up that CM Punk forced Colt Cabana out of AEW, moved him to Ring of Honor, almost lost his job, this, and that, blah, 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 blah. And that built and metastasized for 7 or 8 months. And then finally, it gets to the point where CM Punk has had it. He's had it with a lot of these journalists that are putting all this shit out there. He's pissed off about what they did to Malachi Black. He's pissed off of what they did towards others. And then he finally blew up. That's why he said, you aspire to be a journalist? Because journalists are supposed to go to the sources, go to CM Punk, go to Colt Cabana. A lot of these people won't do that because if he goes to Colt Cabana and Colt Cabana says, yeah, I was forced out because of him. Well, now you got to report that. You don't keep it in. Or if he goes to CM Punk and CM Punk says, no, I didn't force him out. I just don't want to have nothing to do with him. Now the story is dead. So instead, they don't say a thing. And it just builds and builds and builds and builds. So now you say to yourself now, Dax Harwood just canceled his FTR podcast because of the Elite media. Because of the narrative that he is giving heat to CM Punk, giving heat to his own partner, getting threats, getting a lot of horrible shit said about him, his family. He doesn't want his daughter seeing it. Don't you think CM Punk is probably really fucking pissed off right now at the media because simply Dax is defending his friend, showing support for his friend. Not even defending his friend, showing support for his friend. CM Punk is my friend. I'm not throwing him under the bus. And because of that, he's been driven to cancel his podcast. You don't think CM Punk is livid right now over it? Okay. So you say to yourself, if this atmosphere was so toxic before, and it's worse now, because a month ago, Dave Meltzer, you know, I feel awful. I feel awful. You know, I just want everybody to succeed. You know, I should have went to CM Punk, and I feel terrible, and I didn't mean it like this and that. And a month later, you know, the Elite don't want anything. CM Punk wants to work with the Elite, but that doesn't mean the Elite wants to work with CM Punk. It's like I'm in Bizarro Land. Like, a month later, it's worse. Now, you think about what led to CM Punk going over the edge. You heard Moxley's comments. You see all these media. And the best part about it, is Tony Khan suddenly started yapping about Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker. Why? Oh, it's because it's a part of a segment on All Access. Tony Khan doesn't say a fucking word trying to calm down the climate. Tony Khan never goes on social media and says, guys, gals, listen, you know, about these topics, you know, this does not help AEW. He doesn't have to reveal that CM Punk is coming back or not. Nobody in AEW is doing a fucking thing to calm down this climate, to stop all of these media outlets and everyday fans, you know, not even something to show a little support to Dax Harwood. Tony, I mean, seriously. How do you not even go out there in support of Dax and say, listen, guys, gals, you know, we did not ask him to shut his podcast down, and we want everyone to please stop with the, this is not, nobody says a fucking thing. No, everybody acts, it's like Hangman Page on Wednesday. We called it out. Hangman Page in August said that he doesn't take advice from veterans. The out-of-touch, outdated, this and that. And 8 months go by, and suddenly this past week, oh, it's blown out of proportion. You were the one that originally said it. Why didn't you correct it over the last 8 months? Because nobody asked me. I mean, come on. I know we love these people in the ring, you know, but I'm watching All Elite Wrestling. I'm not watching, you know, mentally, you know, deranged or, you know, vegetative state wrestling, like comatose championship wrestling. I mean, with that stupid, motherfucker, you left it sit out there for 7-8 months where every Hall of Famer and every podcaster and everybody throws their opinion and this and that, and then 8 months, oh, it's grossly exaggerated. I didn't clear it up because nobody asked me. So what do I think is going on right now? I think this time around, the media is in on his storyline. Because you look at CM Punk. Why would CM Punk in his right fucking mind come back to an even more toxic environment that now you're segregated? You have your own show, your own locker room, your own this, your own that, and these people don't want to have anything to do with you. Does that even make sense? Plus, what if the ratings are shit on a Saturday? You mean to tell me you push All In at Wembley Stadium? He's not going to be on Dynamite? He's not going to be plugged on Dynamite? That creative is just going to act like he doesn't exist? This is all storyline. This is all blurred lines versus sloppy shop all over again. Right now, Bryan Danielson, as we said the night he returned, they're playing that storyline right now. The Elite and being called amateurs and this and that, Bryan Danielson is doing a storyline right now that CM Punk was supposed to do. That's really what it is. But right now, this is all storyline, in my opinion. Because CM Punk, in his right mind, his morals, is not going to come back to an even more toxic environment to have these elite media repeatedly calling him wrong, 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 wrong. He doesn't apologize. He's this, he's that. The locker room doesn't want him there. The elite don't want him there. You know, this, this, and that. Oh, but Tony wants him there. You know, it's, this is a storyline. It's just like, it's almost like a hybrid of MJF that, you know, MJF is so loose cannon that MJF could just fly home and MJF could no show this and MJF could hold out here and MJF doesn't have to do this and doesn't have to do that. But so Tony Khan just gives MJF whatever he wants, you know, and they play it on TV. MJF is contractually required to appear in Milwaukee. You know, to make it seem like MJF wouldn't even give a shit about AEW unless he was forced to be there. So CM Punk, based on his morals, in his right mind, would not come back to this. Here's another, and I've said this before. It's common sense. There are a lot of people in AEW that cannot speak out. They get an opportunity that they would never get anywhere else. They might end up at GCW. They might be able to work indies. Might be able to get a cameo in Impact Wrestling. But they are getting paid and getting an opportunity in AEW they would never get anywhere else. And some of these people are on CM Punk's side. They cannot say a damn thing. Because you're dealing with, let me say it like this. You look over the years, this book's been written about it. Fights, altercations in the back. You know, Sid Vicious, Arn Anderson, Scissors, this person fights, locker room fight, in a hotel room. There have been so many fights over the years because there's a little bit of a skirmish after the all-out media scrum that it's to the point that the locker rooms have to be segregated and this person's not allowed here and does not want it here from one locker room. You imagine if we had social media in the 70s, the 80s, social media as it is now in the 90s. You imagine hearing about a backstage fight, you know, and you know what happens? A lot of these people end up working with each other. Remember the incident with JBL and Joey Styles? JBL and others, Meanie, the other shit. These people, because somebody was bitten, could never accept his apology. These people are so lightweight. This is about immature people with a lot of power who don't like other people and their personalities. And that is to the core. That will never change. CM Punk, it would be such a hypocrite if he were to come back to an environment that's even worse than what it was before. These journalists are like crackheads right now. Fightful broke the story about CM Punk returning. Have you seen Fightful say anything about all this other stuff going on? No. Have you seen Jason Powell write any of this stuff going on? No. Because a lot of these journalists think that they're part of a storyline right now. They are pushing a narrative of a story. They are pushing about segregation and pushing about people not apologizing, people this, people that, because it's furthering a story. Because if they were doing what they were doing before, CM Punk is going to call these motherfuckers out again. And what are you going to do? Punk, what are you doing? I'm biting my tongue. I'm getting paid to bite my tongue. He's the voice of the voiceless. And people out there with no voice are not going to sit back and suddenly, like, this is not like a Me Too movement. Like, speak up. Speak. Reveal yourself. Show that you're against the elite. Show that you believe that CM Punk was right. Show that you want to work with him. No, people are going to, I'm neutral. Because they don't want to lose what they have. Some people have family. Some people are married. You know, some people have a lot of bills. Some people overindulge themselves. They're not going to lose probably their best opportunity in the world of pro wrestling to work in a segregated locker room. The first fucking feud that CM Punk is rumored to have is against a guy that don't like him. The first rumored feud is against somebody who's not going to be wrestling on Saturday nights. These guys right now are pushing a narrative because when CM Punk returns and when we get closer to Wembley and when there's pull-aparts with security guards and maybe even like, hey, you could potato me to make it more realistic, and CM Punk is pulled apart by the, you know, against the Elite and Kenny Omega and this and that, people are going to think there's going to be a shoot fight at Wembley. And all of these journalists that are doing this shit right now, they're all going to pat themselves on the back and say, we set this up. Because Tony Khan isn't saying a fucking thing to try to shut this down. AEW management's not saying a goddamn thing to shut this down. No wrestlers are speaking up for Dax, speaking up for CM Punk, speaking up for the Elite. Brandon Cutler is the only one that retweeted something the other day that CM Punk is gaslighting AEW, and he deleted it about an hour later. He's the only one, and he deleted an hour later. Made sure everybody took notice and then deleted it. My friends, ain't no way CM Punk is coming back to an atmosphere that is 10 times worse. No fucking way that is a network going to indulge that kind of money based on a guy who, you know, walked out, had a fight, injured this, that, this, all for a Saturday night show for what, 400,000 viewers, 500,000 viewers? And the $52 million is assumption. If Warner pays this, if, no, it's when or did, you know. So to me, I think a lot of this is storyline. That's why I'm not buying into half this stuff anymore. Because if I was CM Punk, I'd be like, what, are you fucking kidding me? I ain't going back to even worse. If I got into a fight before, fuck that. I'm going to be putting people in the hospital next time around. Nobody on that roster is going to have the ball. It's all going to be a storyline. And you could picture it already. Thunder Rosa will be on Saturday nights. FTR will be on Saturday nights. And then when those numbers still draw shit, you'll see them show up on Dynamite. Before the end of 2023, CM Punk will be on Dynamite. You will figure out very quickly that a lot of this is storyline. And look, if it's storyline, cool. But the fact that Tony Khan doesn't say a goddamn thing about to try to calm this climate down or management, that's no excuse other than a lot of this storyline. Because there's some journalists right now that deserve to get kicked right in the fucking teeth for half the shit that they're saying. It's bizarro land. It's bizarro land. And it ain't happening. So, all right. We're going to finish this up with a couple of super shout outs. Nero Fay, thank you for the six spot, my friend. Do I think Wembley will be sold out? No, I don't. I think Wembley, the number I put out there, I think that they will fill about 55,000 seats. Not all the seats will be paid. There will be comps. When they get very close to the day of the event, you will see tickets on sale for $5, $10. And that's not embarrassing because you have, I guarantee they will, listen, they will sell more than 50,000 tickets. What will happen is you'll get a boatload of scalpers who think they're going to break the bank on this. They're going to buy loads and loads of tickets, and they're going to hold out, and then they're going to get stuck with it. That's why you see sometimes tickets go on sale for $2 for an AEW Dynamite event. Understand that when the ticket's on sale for $2, AEW already got their money. That scalper bought the ticket at face value, and AEW put the money in their pocket. Now that scalper got stuck with a ticket that they didn't get $50 for. They didn't get $20 for it. And now it's the date of the event. Fuck, what am I going to do with this? Leon, let me get $2 instead of nothing. You know, let me get something out of it. That's what happens. So you're going to see, you know, a couple of thousand tickets get comped. You're going to see giveaways on every station, TV, radio, internet. People like us will probably be able to give away tickets. You know, everybody talks about this sign up. Oh, 60,000 people already signed up. So did I. Am I going? No. I know a boatload of people who signed up because we just wanted to sign up, get the first alerts and everything like that. That doesn't mean nothing. So no, it's not going to sell out 90,000 people, but I think legitimately 55,000 is a realistic number. And at the end of the day, even if they sell 50,000 tickets and only 40,000 show, those 10,000 no-shows, AEW got their money. John Fawcett with a two-spot. D DT breaking out Milli Vanilli is amazing. I never liked Milli Vanilli. I couldn't stand him. I hate to say it, I didn't even feel bad when one of them, left us early. I just never liked him, But I was selfish because I loved house music. And there used to be a group called Black Box. Some of you probably heard everybody. There was a singer, Martha Wash. And you remember, Gonna Make You Sweat? That song, Gonna Make You Sweat? Dun, 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 dun. The singers were not real. They were models. Martha Wash was the one singing behind the scenes. Martha Wash is like this. And they would never show her because she was fat and unattractive. So they would put an Italian model lip syncing, but meanwhile, it wasn't them. I'm telling you, if you look it up, you'll be pretty amazed. So when Milli Vanilli came out, I felt a little bit hypocritical because I was like, yeah, there's other bands that I like that were lip syncing too. So, I just didn't like their music. Like, I don't want to say I didn't care that the guy, left us early. I just was indifferent. I was like, man, well, maybe you shouldn't have, went that route. It's like, hey, it's fucked up, but hey, they got more problems to deal with. So, I was never a Milli Vanilli fan. But obviously, they've stuck with me. Mitchell Davies with the 10 spot. Thank you, Mitchell. With the amount of money WWE must make off the kids demographic, in a previous episode, I said we could see WWE going back to TV-14. Could this alienate that audience? Yeah, but you got to understand something. Endeavor's buying this company. Endeavor doesn't have Ultimate Fighting for Kids. I punch you. You punch me. Endeavor's buying it. It went to the highest bidder. So, I truthfully believe Endeavor is not going to tremendously alter WWE programming. There's a reason why WWE is still selling out like crazy. There's a reason why WWE is making the crazy money they're making right now. There's, again, that saying, if it's not broken, you don't fix it. So I think in a lot of ways, they will continue catering for kid-friendly and entertainment. But if it comes to that 10 o'clock hour, most children are not supposed to be up that late anyway, yeah, I think you might see a little bit of blood. You might see a little bit of more adult-orientated forms of entertainment. Endeavor is not for children. UFC is not for children. So this is a company that's buying it that their primary product right now is not designed for children. So I don't think they will really alter much of WWE programming. Plus, if you look at the Nielsen demographic, the majority of people that are watching WWE between 10 and 11 are much older. And look, understand, during the Attitude Era, yes, there were a lot of parents that would not let their kids watch TV, but there were still a lot of kids that still watched the Attitude Era. So I don't think the product would be changed enough where you would see a lot of protesting online and a lot of these, we got to boycott WWE for now doing this. So they have to be very careful about it. Listen, a lot of people thought Raw Underground was going to be a little bit more mature. In fact, when you see people talking about news with TV-14, what's the screenshot they usually show you? They usually show you Shane McMahon with a couple of women dressed behind him. And if you look at the women, they could walk into a department store dressed like that. If you're trying to say to me that they're dressed slutty, you don't even know what the fuck slutty is. So no, I don't think so. I don't think they'll change it that much. Rojo Bear, happy 26 months as a channel member. By the way, I didn't mention this earlier, and I should have. We're doing it a little bit different this week. If you are interested, talk to me. We're doing a Q&A, and it's open for channel members. So, we're still going to do Q&A for everybody, but this week we have it open for channel members. So if you're a channel member here, there's a thread on YouTube right now, so you can post a question, and I'm going to record it next Thursday. So Go check it out. So I forgot to mention that. And look, down the line, I think we may be doing a special Q&A episode with Kevin and myself together. So we got a couple of things lined up. Right now, we want to see what happens with the draft. So, but yeah, other than that, I think we are done. We almost 2 hours, a little bit longer than I expected, but I wanted to take my time, especially about the CM Punk stuff, because, you know, you really got to, you know, take notice. You know, Tony Khan on Busted Open, very revealing about Thunder Rosa, very revealing that her and Britt Baker will never get along and all this other stuff. And then you realize, oh, that's because it's featured on All Access. You know what I mean? I will say this. If they continue All Access for another 6 episodes, I would be fascinated to see how they would try to pull this off with the CM Punk Elite stuff. It would be very interesting because, you know, a lot of All Access, from what I've seen, is based on some real life stuff. But, you know, remember, it's sports entertainment at the end of the day. This is pretty much a reincarnation of TNA Reaction. All Access, I admit, is definitely better than what TNA Reaction was. But, you know, it's going to be really interesting, especially when you realize that, you know, they ignore all of the snowballs that are being built online by journalists. That awful shit that they said early on, that a couple of women that support Thunder Rosa were being buried in AEW because they support Thunder Rosa. That's a story that should have gotten bigger, but it didn't, because the elite media are the ones that threw it out there originally. And then when they got caught early on, I don't know if it was Sean Dean or somebody caught them early, like everybody deleted it and they're like, oof, you know, we fucked up here and let's move on. So it never turned into a big story, but the telltale sign is that if Tony Khan goes on Busted Open and starts talking freely about CM Punk and his relationship with the Elite, this and that, then you're going to realize, number one, there was never an investigation. And number two, Tony Khan doesn't suddenly grow a set of balls. He's just trying to promote something on TV. And maybe that's smart on his part. You just have to be smarter to understand what it actually is. But let me know what you think. Do you still feel that a lot of this is storyline? Because to me, there's no way that CM Punk is returning to an even more toxic environment. I don't care what Tony Khan offers to pay him. I can't picture Warner Media like opening the floodgates based on this toxic environment. You're like, oh, the show, you know, it's going to be segregated and these people don't want to work with each other. And it's that, I don't think Warner Media is looking for like a bad reality show. You know, and then when the numbers are shit, what do you do? What do you do? Do you just die with it? No, you're paying that kind of money. You're doing pay-per-view. It's like no time you'll see them appear on Dynamite. So, all right, everybody, I'm out of here. Much love. If you are interested, tomorrow night, Sunday night at 8 o'clock, I will be here for the sit-down. It'll be about an hour, and basically it's all Q&A. I show up with a blank piece of paper, and whatever you want to talk about, that's what we talk about. Wrestling, non-wrestling, whatever is on your mind. Every week that we do these shows, people that tune in live come up with some bangers of discussion. I mean, there's some great, and the awesome thing about it is a lot of the discussion ends up actually happening in the world of pro wrestling. The TV 14 stuff we talked about in a regular discussion, you know, even MJF versus Kenny Omega, which is a match nobody has on their radar, I think is happening this year. I think that is actually going to happen. But anyway, post a comment. Let me know what you think about what I said tonight. And yeah, just if you enjoyed the show, you know what to do. And if you know anyone else out there that would enjoy the channel as well, let them know about it. And don't forget DonTony.com, because audio versions of everything I do are there. And we're going to start doing some fun little interactive contest over there, where something that I do here, I will embed like a magic word or something during those shows. I'll tell you where it is, the timestamp. I'm not going to make you sit 90 minutes. I'll tell you, like, around the one-hour mark, tune in. There's a special word. And I'll even say what the word, magic word and all that. And then at the end of the month, we'll do a big giveaway. And all you'll have to do is just tell me what the three magic words were for that month. So will we make it into a funny sentence? Maybe. You know, will it end up meaning something? Maybe. I'm just trying to think outside the box, especially since, you know, I do, you know, realize that still almost 90% of you out there, majority, tune into only the audio versions of my shows, because not everybody needs to see this. You know, they like to listen while they're driving, when they're working, when they're on the bus, on the train, you know, on the treadmill. You know, as long as you're not listening during intercourse, that's all I ask. So be well, everybody.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a podcaster. For me to live any other way was nuts. To me, those goody-good people who work shitty jobs for bum paychecks and took the subway to work every day and worried about their bills were dead. I mean, they were suckers. They had no balls. If I wanted something, I just took it. I ran everything. I paid the bills. I paid the hosts. I even paid the masked maniac. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. We always called each other good fellas. You would always hear from somebody. You're gonna like Don Tony. He's all right. He's a good fella. He's one of us. But if you're part of my crew, nobody ever tells you they're gonna get rid of you. It doesn't happen that way. There weren't any arguments or curses like in the movies. See, your haters come with smiles. They come as your friends, the people who've claimed they care the most for your life. And now that's all over. And that's the best part. Today everything is different. There's lots of action. I don't have to wait around for everything like everyone else. Oh, I didn't get the vaccine? Fuck you, vaccine me. Oh, your delivery guy has COVID? Fuck you, feed me. Right after I moved here, I ordered egg noodles and ketchup, and I got spaghetti with meat sauce. I'm no longer an average nobody, while they get to live the rest of their lives like a bunch of schnooks.